I'm Clint Emerson, and welcome to Season 2 of Can You Survive This Podcast, where the interview is just as dangerous as the scenarios I put my guests through. From hostage situations to natural disasters, carjackings, active shooters, and more, if you're looking for the skills necessary to survive these situations, then this is the show for you. Thanks for listening, all seven of you. That's awesome. Today, I've got action sport doer, American flag hoister, former U.S. Navy SEAL, author, host of Frogman Friday, and the founder of Sons of the Flag and the Bird's Eye View Project. I have Ryan Birdman Parrott. How you doing, buddy?
I'm super excited to be here, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Love it. You're a local guy. You're in the studio, and I've had this current debate going for a while now on what to call this thing. What would you call it? Would you call it a cave, a studio, a garage, a shop?
I mean, a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Multi-versatile. Yeah, this is sick.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what to actually...
The lair.
Hey, we're at lair.
Lair.
We're at the lair.
Yes.
We're at the cave. We're at the man place. So, dude, it's good to be here. You're local. We never see each other. You're good about hitting me up. I'm horrible about responding, but, you know, I don't have any excuses other than I tend to ignore my phone most of the time because I hate it. What about you? Are you kind of like a fuck technology person?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the only way we run today, right? It's yeah. Like, all right, I'm going to put that off for a while. And, you know, we've been busy. Everybody's getting busy and yeah. There's so much opportunity out there right now. So you got to seek it.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. It's like one thing after another. And before you know it, the year's gone by and you're putting up Christmas lights, taking them down, then back into the summer and you're trying to take clothes off because you can't get cool enough. And then you're right back to putting a bunch of clothes on to try and stay warm. It's just a cycle. It just keeps going. It's fucking stupid. Okay. So as usual, we're going to start with your rapid fire. I hope this is fun for you, but we'll find out. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Throwing star or blowgun?
Throwing star.
Throwing star. Why?
Cooler.
Yeah, throwing star cooler. Is cooler. I mean, ninjas are cool.
Everybody grew up with throwing stars.
Right.
Every kid wanted a throwing star.
And where are they now? Like, is it illegal or something?
I was not allowed to be a ninja. I have no idea.
Yeah. I've actually Googled them from time to time, and you can buy. I got some really cool custom ones. I don't know where they're at that some guy made, but you just can't find them anymore.
My wife Googled them not too long ago because she wants them. My wife's from Russia. So yeah. That's not fucking happening.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's dangerous.
Especially right now. What does she think of Putin and his decisions?
She doesn't. She voted for Trump.
She voted for Trump?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that kind of makes sense. I think Trump and Putin are buddies, right?
Totally.
So the media says.
Yeah.
Okay. Next. Boots or sandals?
Sandals.
Sandals. Yeah. Sandals guy. Me too. Even though I never... Since I've been out, I wore them all the time at like most team guys from the West Coast where you've got your flip-flops with your jeans and everybody looks at you funny, but it's normal there. But as soon as you start doing it somewhere else, people are like, oh, it's kind of strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we evolved. It was Tevas first, right? Were you on the East Coast all the time?
Or? West Coast.
West Coast. Okay. Yeah. 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 And it started with Tevas when I first came in. Then those became kind of gay, like the 1980s version of gay. So don't get offended out there. And then we switched to flip-flops for most of the part, right?
And then you moved to Texas and everybody's got cowboy boots. And I'm like, don't you get these on? I'm like, wait, I'm from Michigan. I don't know anything about cowboys.
Yeah. So yeah, you're just, sandals are more relaxed, more comfortable. I like them too. And I can't feel my feet anymore anyway. So even when it's cold out, wearing sandals, they do fine.
Right? I just have no point to use boots.
No boots. Sand or snow?
Snow.
Snow?
Mm-hmm.
Are you, is that because you're like, skier, snowboarder kind of guy? Or
skier, snowboarder, everything winter sports. I'm from Michigan. Played ice hockey my whole life.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah, I like the winter.
So surfing?
I love surfing, but I would always go to the hills.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
Big mountain skills or hospital bills?
Oh, yeah. I've never heard that one. Yeah. Is that a bumper sticker up there?
Not yet. Maybe.
Yeah. Okay, this one's right up your alley. Parachute or bungee jump?
Parachute.
Parachute. All right. And then, of course, what if you did parachute from an aircraft versus base jump? Which one would you go with?
Base jump.
Base jump. Because that's your thing, right?
Yeah. And
base jumping is...
It's the most primal thing you can do. I mean, let's ixnay war on that for a second.
Yeah. Because
anybody can go do this. And
and Let's review. BASE stands for what again?
B-A-S-E? Building Antenna Span Bridge Earth.
Okay, and so, have you done all four?
All four.
Multiple times?
Yep.
Okay, and we're going to dig into that here in a minute. Okay, Rolex or G-Shock?
G-Shock.
G-Shock, yeah. What was that? What was issued when you went in?
Yeah, yeah.
Me too. And then it evolved into Suntos, and then finally, you know, switching to, I think they switched 100% to these Garmins now, the Phoenix series, I think.
I only did 8 years, so we were just G-Shock.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, G-Shocks are cool. Yeah. UDTs or Silkies?
Damn, that's a hard one.
Yeah.
Silkies.
Yeah, I agree, yeah, man. I think UDTs are cool only because they just have that tradition and history.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, and they turn your balls and the head of your dick into like steel from chafing all the time. But,
yeah, they're terrible.
But Silkies are far more comfy.
For sure.
Which the Marines, I think... kind of own that term.
Did you ever get a pair of UDTs that didn't have like five names already stenciled and crossed out on it though? It's like we're wearing everybody else's ball sweat. So.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little gross, but you know, there is a brotherhood there.
Yes.
Yeah. And they smell good too. Kettlebells or dumbbells?
Kettlebells.
Yeah, me too. For sure. I think it's because most people look at those as if it's a novice or someone who doesn't understand them, they think kettlebells and dumbbells are supposed to be used kind of the same. When the reality is, the kettlebell is a full body exercise tool if done properly, right?
It's so much more versatile.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. You can do a lot with them. Dumbbells, I've seen people start to take dumbbells to the next level and doing, you know, more full body stuff with it. But yeah, I'm a kettlebell person myself too. Fixed wing or helo?
Helo.
Helo? Why?
I don't like landing in airplanes as much as that is the weirdest thing, because you're trusting that pilot to make that landing every time.
Yeah.
I just don't like, plus it takes too long to get to where I want to go, where helicopters just go straight up, you go down, you can jump out of it. It's kind of almost dead air exits. So
yeah.
I'm always thinking about jumping out of this stuff, not just flying in it.
Right.
So I like helis.
So jumping out, you get the free fall effect.
Well,
you jump out of a helicopter.
Absolutely. I mean,
like you feel the fall. Yeah. I think most people don't understand that. Like if you're jumping out of a fixed wing platform, meaning like an aircraft with wings and it's moving, when you jump out, you don't get that much of a sensation that you're actually falling.
Right? You're already moving at terminal velocity when you exit.
Yeah.
Right. So as a helicopter, you're almost dead air exit. So you get that crazy, almost pit feeling stomach where you're like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Plus it's quiet and you hear the wind go as you go out of it. So there's just, and plus heli skiing, heli boarding.
Yeah.
It's just such an awesome application to get anywhere.
So. Yeah. And so you being an extreme sport person, I mean, so yeah, you're picking the thing that's the most versatile, even though helos in the military are always called whistling shit cans of death.
Yeah.
Because a helicopter essentially isn't supposed to fly. Right.
Every time we get off a heli for an op, we'd fall.
Yeah, exactly.
Run 2 feet and you just see the feet go in the air.
That's right. All right. Speed or 4x4?
Speed.
Speed.
Yeah.
You'd rather go fast than traverse terrain.
I hate going slow.
Yeah.
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 And I think there's a technical and a beauty to that technicalness, but for me, I just love speed.
Yeah. You get tickets? Are you a ticket kind of guy? Are you ticket prone?
I'm boring when I drive my normal car.
Oh,
but then again, it's, you know, an SUV, so.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not really looking for me. Really, if I were you and had your ride, maybe.
Yeah. Hauling ass. It's kind of, it's what we do.
But I will race you. We should actually do this. I should actually get my wingsuit and jump, and you should be on the actual tarmac, and you just floor it, and I'll see if I can beat you in my wingsuit.
I think you'll probably beat me.
Let's do it.
Because by the time you're that low, how far would you be off the ground?
So I'll still be high up, but we can put a camera over us to see what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, we should do that.
All right.
That sounds like a great YouTube video.
I'm in.
It'll go viral. Okay. Rifle or bow?
Rifle.
Rifle. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
This bow hunting thing, have you seen how much it's like been trending lately on like social media and stuff?
I was a sniper. And so what I do appreciate is how difficult, how much more you have to put into bow hunting to get closer to the animal, to truly understand your craft. But I'm also a guy who grew up in the city of Detroit, Michigan. We weren't bow hunting or rifle hunting. And so I learned how to rifle just in the military. So that's for me.
I agree. I like both. And it's like a mood thing for me. You know, patience and putting in the time and effort with a bow hunt, I think, is far more like an endeavor than with a rifle.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, you can set up and, you know, have some serious distance between you and your meat with a rifle and not have to put out so much energy. But with a bow, you got to get close and you got to be quiet. And there's a lot going on there. So
you have to be more accurate too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Of course. For sure. Yeah. And you got to make sure it hits the right spot. Okay. So let's roll into this. Let's get to know you first. All right. So you went into the teams when?
2002.
And what buds class were you in?
245 to start, finished with 246.
245 to 24. Was that an injury?
Land navigation primarily, but I got heat stroke, third phase.
Oh, wow.
And that's the like worst scenario is getting rolled in third phase when you're about to graduate.
Oh, my God.
It's like right there at the cusp, and then you're rolled back another 2 months. You're like, come on. So
were you rolled back to the beginning of third phase at the next class?
Yeah.
Okay. So at least you didn't have to like go undo and redo a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah. But I sucked at land nav again, you know, being from Michigan, grew up in the city. And so when we got out in the field and I'm literally looking at this map and compass, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Where am I? And then they're like, oh, you're pointing somewhere out there and it's the size of a, you know, a little stack. And you're like, oh shit. And then I'm completely lost and running around. So it didn't, I wasn't tracking.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, if you're wearing a metal buckle, my compass didn't work so well that day, right? You can blame it on the metal.
Totally.
Yeah, it only works once. Okay, so then you finish Buds and you roll into, which SEAL team did you go to?
Went to Team 7.
Team 7.
Alpha.
Was it new then?
It was the second platoon, yes.
Yeah.
So they just opened up the year before.
Okay.
So just missed the plank owner spot, which didn't matter because as a new guy, who cares?
Right. Know? Yeah.
But it was quite eye-opening for sure.
And then, so how did your time in the teams kind of play out for you?
You know, I was single in my career, 8 years, and I thought it was everything because I tried to get as many schools as I could. I mean, they kept offering, kept taking.
Yeah.
And I had nothing taking me back or holding me back. So I just lived every minute to the fullest. Between schools and doing workups. And during that time, it was, you know, the kickoff of the war. So a lot of our instructors hadn't seen war yet. And then they were all kind of like, you know, fuck you, man, because you're getting ready to go and you haven't even served in the teams. And I've been here for 10 years and I'm stuck in instructor duty. It was really cool, but it was nice because when I rolled into the platoon first time, everybody had combat experience. And so it wasn't like they were just selling me anecdotal bullshit. It was like, we just got back from war. We're telling you real stuff here. And that was cool because, you know, most of the guys, I was 20 when I joined the platoon. So most of the guys were 27, 28.
They were old.
It was older. Yeah, old. Totally. Senior citizens.
Yeah.
But it was cool to hear that, have that leadership, that experience, and then go do it. And it was crazy, man. You know, first deployment, you know, you don't do much as a new guy. You're kind of in the back of the train, like, all right, squadron control, just kind of being out there. And then I got fucked up. I got blown up. And so my first deployment was cut short.
No shit. Okay, so let's go through that. You was this an IED type deal or?
Yeah, pressure plate IED. It was like a 155. EOD went and did some diagnostics on afterwards, but blew the front end of our Hummer off. We were the fourth car in our convoy. So how the hell they didn't hit it before us? But we exploded and sent shrapnel through the cockpit. I was actually in the turret, so it shot me straight out of the turret into the sky. And that's how I got the nickname Birdman. Because it went like 6,000 feet up, you know, really. Some say 7. Probably like blew up on top of the turret and then rolled off to the ground. But shrapnel burned first and second degree. And I was the least of the injured. So it was, that's like, I kind of.
So your nuts, all the important stuff, okay?
Super important. It's good to go.
It was good?
Yeah. So good. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what I think about all the time.
They don't tell you that, too. When you're doing like a medical check on yourself, they don't tell you to touch your crotch first, but you do. It's like instantly, like, I'm going to override that with my own.
Yeah.
And so that was cool.
So let's break that down for those that don't know. Like when you say 155, what are we talking about there?
It's like an anti-tank mine, right? It's a very, very big IED. And from what I understand, because I'm not an EOD, I'm not an explosive like taking bombs apart expert, but what they say is that it went low order. And so it was packed. So it was packed incorrectly. So it had air bubbles or air pockets in it. So it only blew to a certain dead weight.
Yeah.
Whereas opposed to what it could have done, it could have completely annihilated us.
Yeah.
But what it did, I mean, the Hummer took the brunt of it, right? So the front end was completely blown off. The doors, they were an inch and a half. We'd just gotten those up armored Hummers. So those steel doors, it blew my driver through his door, blew my VC, my chief through his door, and they got fucked up pretty bad. So it was gnarly. But I took the path of least resistance, you know, 135 pounds, old Birdman. See ya.
Straight out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Damn. Well, glad you made it through that and you're here. And then the other guys, they all make it through or?
Everybody. Yeah. Everybody. That was the coolest thing the first time I saw like a team actually work in a cohesive unit. Cause you know, we're, you know, when you're moving 60 miles an hour down the road and you get blown up, everybody's still cruising until yeah. they all stop. So we only had one vehicle that pulled up on us real quick in case you get ambushed.
Right.
So for that few minutes where you're trying to reorganize, you're wondering what's going to happen, getting yourself in a position, checking your buddies. And then everybody came back pretty quick. So it was like 22 minutes from the time that we were blown up to the time everybody was under the knife getting surgery.
Damn. So yeah.
Pretty sweet.
That's a, yeah. Cause I did the initial push when there was nothing. You were just like sleeping under your Humvee every night. You didn't have a place to sleep. You didn't have beds. You know, it was a different, I always tell people it was the closest thing to probably true combat because you don't have a home. You don't have like continuous supply of anything. And what we put in our Humvees, which were not armored up, they had plastic doors. That's all we had. Whatever you put in the Hummer and got on Highway 1 and drove north from Kuwait and you're just driving during the day, you know, four Humvees with a bunch of idiots in it.
So that's what's interesting.
And it was
too.
Fun.
That's interesting that I hear that because when I joined the platoon, the first deployment they went on, they were doing that. They were taking their body armor off, hanging it in the doors, to give themselves mm-hmm. some extra or sitting on their plates.
Yeah.
And then we show up for our next deployment. We got like housing or berthing and they're like, what is this? And I'm like, I don't know any better. This is pretty sweet. They're like, dude, we had none of this last deployment.
The turnaround is fast.
It's
if
so
you think
fast.
About it. I mean, and of course, that's where all of America's defense contractors are making bank, but putting that shit up in lightning speed.
Yeah.
All right. So you got blown up. You're back to the States or surgeries. Where'd you go? Did you go to Germany and then, or did you come all the way back home? And
yeah, I flew to Germany and then I went to Balboa. So okay. San Diego.
Yeah.
But my injuries were small, so I was in and out of the hospital, but the command thought that it'd be better I'd stay back, and I'm like, why? Like, you know the deal, like, I don't know much about being a team guy, I'm brand new, but I want to be back with the guys.
Yeah.
And interesting, and I talked to the master chief, I'm like, hey man, I want to go back overseas with the guys. And this is when they were doing rips, right?
Oh, yeah.
So our platoon actually went from Iraq to Philippine Islands, and vice versa, they flipped over. So I was like, well, I just want to get back with them. He's like, well, there's only one thing that supersedes an injury, and that's a qual. And I'm like, okay, what qual are we talking? He's like, UAV. I was like, oh, shit. Okay. So that's those unmanned aerial vehicles. So right. I had to go there for a couple of weeks, do that qual, and then I got shipped back to the platoon.
What the? So fucking weird, right?
I threw it, and I was like, okay, so you're the new UAV pilot. Throw it up. Let's see what you got. And I threw it up, and I crashed it, and that was the end of my career with UAVs.
Perfect. I'm sure you did that on purpose.
Totally.
Yeah, I would, too. It's like, fuck this, man. Those things don't really – I mean, it's like 1 out of 10 times you throw them, they actually do what they're supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're like a serious drone, like a legitimate pilot flying those real deal ones.
Yeah.
I mean, those weak ones that we had, the Raven A's and B's, they were just like –
Yeah, they always nosedive. Mm-hmm. I saw it happen time and time again with us, too. It's like, what the fuck is the purpose?
None.
But there is times when it works. Like, I remember we were taken down. It was actually like a huge post office or, you know, mailing center of sorts. And, like, you know, Intel was like, hey, Fedayeen, there are a bunch of them there. And they're storing a lot of weapons and rockets and all this crap there. And it was right near a railroad. You know, and so it was kind of in the middle of nowhere. It was on the outskirts of, I don't remember which city, like Anasri or something. And we got that drone up and, it actually took off first throw, got it up, got it orbiting.
That's impressive
in
itself.
It had the IR, the thermal payload on or whatever the hell it had. And it actually got great video of us moving in, take down, and then we set charges and just blew the whole fucking thing up when we left, you know? And got it. It was the only video that actually we got out of all the other attempts to try and get cool shit on video. That was the only one. That's awesome. It looked really cool. It reminded me of, what was that scene? One of the Tom Clancy movies where the SAS guys were moving across the desert to hit a terrorist camp. It was when he was going after... more like IRA type terrorists, you know what I mean? And remember that? I don't know if you watched that movie.
Yeah.
It looked just like that. It kind of reminded me of it because we had comms flowing through it and it all sounded cool. Now, hell, I don't even know where the video went at this point. I remember hanging on to it for a long time and then it got lost in the mix.
We never had that.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably a good thing.
It's because I was the pilot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go. Okay. Let's see here. So you get back. Now, did you get medically retired or did you just kind of like, hey, I'm done?
You didn't know anything. Like, I got a TBI and I didn't know about it, right? We didn't talk about those in 05. We didn't even know what they were. And kind of the deal was, you know, you get injured, whatever, you do everything you can to get back and then you go back and do it again.
Yeah.
And so I formed back up into another platoon at Team 7, Alpha Platoon. And that's what I was going to, my goal was just keep pumping out platoons. So I did 5 deployments, 2 mini deployments, 1 to Lebanon and 1 of the Philippine Islands. Those were fun, non-combat related. It's where I get a lot of my tattoos from.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other 3 were to Iraq. And so 2009 was my last deployment to Iraq and I was in Basra. So I did Ramadi primarily my career and then Basra to finish it off, which was cool. Just a little different taste of a theater. But in 09, I could see it start to die down. The war was definitely taking a turn and nobody was really doing anything.
Yeah.
So I was like, what are we doing here?
Right.
So let's move around. Let's do something else. And I didn't have enough leadership, enough rank. So kind of just stayed put. So
yeah,
that was the impetus for me to say, all right, I'm going to take a break now from doing pumps because doing a fourth deployment or a fourth back-to-back rotation at Team 7, like, yeah, you got to go do your time over at an instructor duty command. So I was like, all right, I'm going to take some time. And that's when I decided to get out. So
you didn't do the instructor route. You just bailed
for 7-8 months. I really don't.
Where were you teaching?
Level 2.
Oh, got it. Yes. Very familiar.
Nothing important about that, just so you know.
Yeah, there really isn't.
It's like a math class, not fun.
Mm-hmm. It's a flashlight repair school on steroids. More with the Birdman, Ryan Parrott, after the break. So then you get out, and let's jump into some of the things you've got going on. I mean, you've got a lot, actually. So let's start with Sons of the Flag.
You know, that was my big thing of getting out of the service was, you know, the deal. When you're out, no matter if you retire or you get out, you have a plan. Some of you don't, but most of the time we have a plan. You go and execute on it. But you miss that meaning and purpose. You don't realize how much meaning and purpose you have when you're in the military until after you're out.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have a mission at all. I was just working. I was bored at it. It wasn't fun, whatever. So we were just in a boardroom with a bunch of veterans talking one day, and there was this Army Ranger who was severely burned, disfigured. And I had to ask him because I'd never seen an injury like that. And I said, hey, what are they doing for you guys today? And he said, look at me. I was like, yeah, I'm looking. And he goes, this is as good as it gets. Mm. I'm talking full disfigurement of his face, his hands, his body's been ripped apart to put skin extra places. And I thought about that idea, and I was like, what if that was me? How would I look at myself in the mirror every day? What would I do about it?
Mm-hmm.
And so I went home that night, grabbed a bottle of Jack Daniels and studied all night long. And I couldn't find anything. It was just outcomes research, things that unless you're a scientist, you don't understand. So the next day I called him and said, hey man, if I were to start something on your behalf, would you join me? He's like, bro, man. And so that was the initial push of Sons of the Flag. It was to help one soldier. That's it.
Yeah.
And I immediately got reached out to by a firefighter in DC who happens to be a legend in the fire community. He's like, I love what you're doing. You need to expand your horizons to fire service. And I want to be your team leader in DC. I'm like, shit, I don't even know what we're doing.
Right.
Like, so now we got a chapter open in DC and they're trying to figure out what to do and trying to raise money. Where are we going? So started infiltrating different burn units and finding out what they're doing, where their problems are and how we can fulfill those or fill those gaps. And so they started giving us capital's needs list. I started reaching out to donors and firefighters just kept jumping on the team. And so over the last 10 years is our 10th year in office and we're in 38 states. We've got chapters around the country, raising money like crazy. And we're helping burn patients get to real burn reconstructive doctors. So It's like any injury that you get in your life, you want to go to the best, right?
Yeah.
So what if we were to find those? And not just hand select them because of they're a cool person, but they actually, the resume and the people, their peers say that they're the people, and then bring them on the team, like force them to be on our team because it's the right thing to do. And then give those patients a one-on-one with this team of doctors to say, this is what happened to me. This is what I'd like. What can you do about it? And then we send them out to those doctors free of charge to get their surgery.
Man, that's great.
So it's one-stop shop.
Yeah. And then so Sons of the Flag, really, where'd you come up with that?
I wish I could say I came up with it. So
yeah.
It was a poem written in World War I based off the Civil War. North and the South fighting against each other. And at the end of the day, fighting together under God. And it's called the USA. And I thought that was pretty unique because we're taking doctors and patients from all around the North and the South and we're putting them together.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, let's go. And we got the name. I got a trademark. So I now officially own it, even though I didn't create it. Like, sweet.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love it. So focusing on burns, I'm guessing is BAMC down at San Antonio still kind of leaders? I know back in the day they were.
Yeah, they're the only burn unit for, they're the real burn unit for DOD.
Yeah.
So that's the only one. We're very blessed in Texas. We've got the DOD Hospital, Brooklyn Reed Medical Center. We've got Parkland Hospital in Dallas, and then we've got Shriners Hospital. So we've got a lot.
Yeah.
Not every state has a burn unit.
Crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
It is.
Like 480,000 people get burned in the USA every year, and there's only 300 burn surgeons nationwide.
Wow. So, it is a specialty.
It is.
And I don't think people know it's a you very unique environment to work in. I did, being an 18 Delta guy, you know, special operations medical school, I did my rotations in San Antonio, and one of them was at BAMC in the burn unit. And I remember day one, I had no idea that the temperature, for example, inside a burn unit is kept at like 105. Yeah, they keep it super hot in there because it's a relief for the patients,
right?
It keeps them, the warmer it is, the better their skin, the burns and everything does. But when you're getting gowned up, because it's also high infection.
Right.
So you've got a heated treatment center, you know, 100 degrees plus or whatever it was, plus you're donning every bit of PPE that you don't, because infection is the biggest killer.
That's right.
After a burn, you know, you're sweating gallons in the first couple of minutes. It's like, how the hell am I going to survive a full day?
It's
insane.
And that's just on a normal day. I mean, dealing with this bullshit virus right now too, you know, what do we have? We have, you know, their bodies, when they're completely taxed head to toe, full thickness of the skin burn, they have no immunity.
Right.
So they're just, it's terrible. And then you think about the children's side of the house.
Oh, yeah.
Because their bodies are going to grow and expand, yet their skin won't.
Yeah.
So what do you do? And so that's really what we try to combat. And so we help the patients, and then we hire doctors every year to become burn surgeons. So we fund 50% of all new burn surgeons in the nation.
Wow.
So we'll
man, that's an somebody. Awesome cause, man. Good job on that. Fuck.
Thanks, bro.
So then let's roll into the next one, which is the Bird's Eye View Project. Now, which came first?
Sons of the Flag.
Sons of the Flag. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about that one.
Well, you know, it's hard enough running one charity, so I thought, let's just go big, right? Yeah, well,
hey, I was successful at this one. Might as well be successful at another one.
Why not?
I mean, I kind of see it. I get it.
It was rough. So the idea behind Bird's Eye View was Sons of the Flag only supports burns, and we stay niche. We can't go outside of that.
Yeah.
We're going to conquer that. So, but we want another organization where we could be a pass-through so that we can support mutually supporting in multiple charities at the same time. We do extreme sports events. We try to do the viral thing, try to get kids to watch what we're doing because we want to influence the next generation to support. There are donors to be. And so we do insane extreme sports events. We raise capital through the experiential events.
Mm-hmm.
And then that goes to multiple charities around the country that we vet and approve and say, hey, these guys are not just looking good on the books, but there's a real mission set that the veteran or first responder sees fit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go out and deploy money to them. So it's been we travel the world, do crazy, crazy shit. And it just keeps that world going. Like, this is what I'm good at, and I've been trained in it. So it's like, why not stay with something that I'm good at and then try to raise money doing it?
Heck yeah. That's a great way of taking kind of what your hobby
to
a certain degree and leveraging it to do something good, which is super cool, which I'm guessing then rolls into what we were talking about earlier, 7X.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about 7X and kind of like this big endeavor you're about to take on.
Yeah. So we've never released it. Nobody knows publicly.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I feel special.
Yes. So you are special. So it all started, you know, I've been doing extreme sports for a long time. I've been a skateboarder my whole life, you know, so, you know, the platoon would always be like, where are you going right now? And off duty doing Shaws or whatever. And like, going to the skate park. And they're like, dude, how old are you again? I'm like, hey, fuck you, man. I'm going to be at the skate park.
That's right.
So I was always like, how can I convert what I do and what I love doing into something that generates awareness and money? And there's no money in extreme sports unless you are like Travis Pastrana or like the legitimate dude who will break themselves to death doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to figure out how I can convert this. Well, we tried for several years, and then I lost my sniper partner to suicide in 2019.
Hmm.
And that was kind of a wake up call for me to say, okay, I'm tired of getting these calls and not doing shit about it. Like, I'm tired of just raising money for the family, memorializing them on that holiday or that day, And what can I do? What are we missing here? You know, we keep talking about suicide, the numbers, and I'm like, what the hell is a missing link here? Now, hear me. I don't think that I'm changing this. I don't think that I'm going to solve it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do my part. So the idea for me is looking at human physiology. You start up, and let's just use the SEAL team since we both know it. You start day one of buds and you start breaking yourself. And it's constantly breaking your body. Everything about your immune system to your physiology. Your sleep is garbage. Your diet is garbage. You don't know what supplementation is. You don't know correct exercise. And then you get through buds and you start with SQT, or then you go to your SEAL team. And then you start an 18-month cycle where you're just doing the same thing, the same repetitive bullshit. You go on deployment, which is worse because there's no sleep. And unless you're in my platoon and, you know, we didn't do much, a lot of dry holes.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's just this repetitive pattern. And year after year after year in 20 years, and then you get out and you wonder why you're fucked up. It's not just the concussions. Certainly it is the concussions and it's all the stuff that you do, but it's more than that. And so while everybody's looking into the brain side of the house, I want to look at the physiology side of the house, look at blood panels, look down to the core and look at what are we doing and what are we missing. And so we're going to train for the next year. This is 2022. And doing all kinds of diagnostics on the human body. I've got a bunch of other Army Special Operations guys, and then myself and a couple athletes, base jumpers and then triathletes. And we're going to test these theories. And then in 2023, we're going to attempt something called 7X. And I'll give you a little taste, but I'm not going to fully release it.
Because yeah.
It's a crazy scenario. But just think about it is going to be the gnarliest extreme sports stunt slash just general stunt using fitness and extreme sports that I have ever done, that anybody probably has ever done in their life. I don't know that it can be done. I'm going to attempt it with a team, but I don't know it can be done. Just think it is going to happen on 7 continents in 7 days. So you want to know more about that, go check out Birdman Actual on my Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah.
And we'll keep leading you down that path. We are going to release this later on, exactly what it is. But just wet your noodle a little bit.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, and that'll be a ball buster. 7 con in 7 days.
Yeah. And there's something, a function of physical fitness on each one, plus an extreme sports deal. And the big thing for this is testing through this year to figure out how to teach a kid how to train right, how to understand homeostasis and getting back to true north. And then on the back end of this 7X project, we're going to reboot the system and we're going to show everybody you can. And so if you're 20, 30 years on the job as a firefighter, a police officer, a military, a nurse, a doctor, how do you actually reboot the system? Don't let it get to that point, but how do you reboot it if you're already there? So that's what we're trying to solve for. And it's going to be, it's going to suck.
Yeah, it might, but afterwards it'll be rewarding as hell, just like everything that sucks.
Yep.
Yeah, that's so cool. Well, we'll look forward to it. Now, once again, and we'll repeat all this, it's at Birdman Actual. Or Ryan Birdman Parrott, and you can Google all that and find him on social with those call signs, for lack of better words.
Totally.
I think they call them handles. I like calling them so call signs.
I was nicknamed Soup in as a new guy, and the other guy was Sandwich. So when I got upgraded to Birdman, he stayed Sandwich. It was a plus.
There you go. Yeah. Soup Sandwich. Yep. More with Navy SEAL and extreme athlete Ryan Parrott after the break. Okay, so now let's all this action sports, extreme sports, go through the list of all the stuff that you feel like you're pretty competent in.
Man,
that's... Your name's skateboarding.
Yeah.
And then we got base jumping.
Yeah.
So let's back up a little, because I don't know much about it. What are all the categories of extreme sport?
There's a ton. I mean, anything you can think of that's not just like basketball, baseball, football, I don't consider those extreme sports.
Yeah.
It's anything like motocross, the skateboarding, snowboarding, skiing, extreme skiing, where they do heli skiing to, you know, ski base or snowboard base.
You know,
wingsuit flying, parachuting in general, street lugeing, you know, mountain boarding, wakeboarding, surfing, you know, anything that's just like, that seems like a really cool pastime. That's what it is. Even I fly in the tunnel. People are getting extreme with it today.
Yeah.
I mean, I was flying a wingsuit in the wind tunnel because we were testing, like, could we train with this on the ground? And if so, that won't kill people when they do it for the first time out of a plane.
Right.
And so I'm in my wingsuit flying in a wind tunnel, and the guy's holding me back, and I'm forward speed 120 miles an hour. if he lets go of me, I'm done.
You crash right into the sidewall.
And dead.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was like, bro.
I'm trusting it. You.
And you see the picture of him like really holding back. I'm like, this is not smart.
Right.
But you got to do it, right? You
yeah.
Save people's lives. So there's so many different categories of extreme sports. And I love them all because they're just so unique. I mean, in base jumping, you're in Switzerland, standing on the edge of a cliff. The most beautiful place. It's peaceful. It's quiet. And your heart is pounding 180 beats a minute. You're doing nothing.
Right.
And then you jump. And for that split second, you're just like. And then you just start flying. You're like, oh, my God, this is amazing. And you actually see yourself traversing over the land. And you got to do the right math. And you got to be smart about what you do. And you got to be man or woman enough to say, today's not for me.
Yeah.
That was the biggest thing I learned from my advisors is some days you're not going to feel like this jump's for you. So walk off the mountain. And I was like, okay, got it. So I do. And that keeps me alive to do it another day.
Right.
So biggest thing for me and why I feel I'm competent in these sports is because I always have advisors with me. I've never jumped by myself. And that's important.
Yeah.
It's what you learn in the military is you always have a swim buddy or you always have a teammate. Same thing in extreme sports is I always want somebody there who's been doing this a lot longer than me. So
no doubt about it. What's your favorite out of the bunch?
I would say skateboarding, just because it's such a beautiful thing. It teaches you life lessons. You fall 1,000 times before you get it right. So it's always about attacking that new trick. I'm an air guy, so I love going high, mega ramps, vert ramps, you know, putting the pads on and seeing if I can do backflips and twists and all that. So definitely skateboarding because it's also manageable. Like I can do it any day of the week I want. Whereas base jumping, it's not legal in America. So I got to go somewhere else and that costs money.
You don't just go somewhere else,
do you? Or you just do something else. Yeah, you go black and you do it off a building at night. And, you know, there's complications there.
So, yeah.
But, I mean, base jumping, if I were doing it professionally and that was my only thing, it'd be cool. But I think skateboarding's perfect. So I can also share it with my children.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing.
How many kids do you have?
Two. I got a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old boy. Ooh. So I was off dive status for plenty of time.
They're still new too.
Yeah.
Did you ever know Dave Scott?
No.
Dave, he's a enlisted guy, gone officer, great dude. And did a couple of deployments with him. But on the second one, and he was big base jumper. Like I remember we were at Shaw's shooting school. He'd sneak away at night to Memphis, climbed the top of whatever the tallest building in Memphis was. He jumped off this thing, and this is like I don't know how many months before deployment. Chute opens, but he turns around and slams straight into the building and then just smears his way all the way down, right? Breaks legs, you know, freaking
punctures
a lung, breaks ribs. He's in the hospital. Now he spends the rest of the workup recovering. And then we go, our first stop on the deployment was to Guam, right? Once again, he disappears. And in Guam, there's a cliff. And at the top of the cliff is an antenna. So he's like, oh, I can check 2 in 1.
Nice.
And then down below, you land on the beach.
Oh, right? Yeah, for sure.
So he goes over, he climbs, he jumps, he lands on the beach. And then he packs up his chute and everything. Puts it whatever into a backpack or however he was going to get back. And as he's coming up the cliff, grabs a rock or whatever, he falls, snaps his neck, dead.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And, you know, and this, once again, we didn't know where he was. So now it's all hands, a whole fucking platoon, trying to figure out, where is Dave Scott? You know, and we still joke about it this day. Like, where did Dave go? You know, and great guy, fucking ballsy motherfucker. And who would have thought, right? He survives all these crazy ass base jumps. But then on the climb back up, right, the simplest part of the day, just had a mishap. And that was that.
See, that's the thing about base is it's the easiest sport in the world until it goes wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's no recovery. Right.
Right. I was like, people give me credit for doing that. And I'm like, don't, it's literally falling. It's too easy. And when it goes wrong is when you need your emergency procedures. So that's why you practice and you just repetition. But he had a 180, and which is a very common thing in base jumping. And it's super scary. Because you can pack your chute right. And if your body's off tilt when you're actually going to pull, or you throw yourself off tilt pulling, And the parachute right comes around. On, you're 180 degrees, so you're facing, coming right at that object, and you have a split second to grab the lines and pull them to actually stall your canopy to get it from going forward, and then you have to start steering it in a different direction. Or if you have even more complicated scenario, which is a 180 line twist, you actually have to grab a set of lines, pull them down to steer yourself away from the cliff within that split second. Yeah. Otherwise, you're impacting, and it's very, very unrewarding. So, yeah, I try it. That's why I like getting away. There's base jumpers that are just insane, and they'll fly right next to proximity and terrain flying, the mountains and that. I'm like, jump and get the fuck away from that cliff and just fly out into the abyss.
Damn.
Yeah.
Now, these wingsuits, you know, once again, assuming listeners don't know what that is, kind of give us the Cliff Notes version of wingsuits and jumping with them.
So everybody calls them a squirrel suit, right?
Yeah.
They look like the flying squirrels. Yeah. And that's actually a company that creates them. They're called Squirrel. So they have Squirrel, and then they have Phoenix Fly. Phoenix Fly is the suits that I fly with. Two different companies that are really the pioneers behind it. Basically, the suits are different sizes. And so it basically gives you an option to fall and actually cruise or drift forward. So there's a fall rate. When you're skydiving, you're falling directly over the drop zone the whole time. As you get into skydiving further, you can actually start tracking. So you put your hands back and you actually get a little bit of forward movement. Mm-hmm. But what suits give you is a ratio. So for every foot I fall, I can glide 2-3 feet forward. And so the assumption is that I could actually jump way off target and fly around and come back to target. And that's what's the nice thing about wingsuiting in skydiving is you can actually move forward. So you can do all kinds of aerials and different tactics, but we're not using them in special operations. I wish we were. Maybe they are in the super secret squirrel missions, but I've never seen them. But ultimately, it's for me, it's like a 3-to-1 glide ratio. So for every foot I've dropped, I glide 3 feet forward. And so I think the discussion is at 15,000 feet on the drop zone, I can fly for about 4 miles before I pull my parachute.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So you take that into base, and then you can actually get away from terrain and you can fly the mountains instead of just base jumping and then having to canopy down the mountain.
It's
interesting.
Yeah, I'd never done any of that, but it always looked cool. I just felt like I remember hearing a couple of years ago, who was it that he was a legend in the wingsuit world, but hit that bridge. He was like trying to go under the bridge, right? Or something like that. And I think whoever it was ended up dying, just smacked it.
So there's
a little timing issue.
This is the problem with the sport is that you always want to try to one up your game.
Yeah.
And you can only tie the lowest record, right? You can't really beat it. It's a problem. It's a problem that we have had for a long time where people are always trying to outdo themselves, and it's purely for YouTube sensations.
All right.
Like, look at this. Look what I did. And it drives him to kill himself. And so the idea behind us is the camera can't tell the difference between 10 feet and 20 feet and 30 feet and 40 feet. So might as well do the 40 feet. Let's put error boxes around everything we do. And let's just do it slow, be conservative about it.
That's a good idea.
Red Bull and a lot of these companies were trying really hard to push the limits. And we had a lot of fatalities within base. And this gave us this, idea as the most dangerous sport in the world for a while. But they've started to slow their rule. A lot of people have taken an interest over helping each other slow down. So if you're interested in base jumping, just go skydive, do a tandem jump and have fun with it. And don't worry about that. And if you truly can't, you have to get into it, go get a school, go get with an instructor. There's an incredible school out of Twin Falls, Idaho that Sean Schumer runs. It's called ID Base. Go through that school. They teach you everything you need to know, and you do it safely, and you can outlive the sport. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm guessing skateboarding is inexpensive, whereas the jumping aspect can get pricey, right?
Yeah. My goal in life is to get sponsored by a real skateboard company.
Yeah.
So I could be the first non-professional to have my own deck.
That would be cool.
So cool.
I think you can pull it off.
I'm in.
All right. So extreme sports, obviously you've been doing that since you were a kid, right?
I mean,
it started with skateboarding and then just grew from there, and you maintained it. I mean, a lot of people don't. They just kind of give it up and move on to other, what they think is cooler things, but
I've never grown up.
Right. I think that's what, exactly. Don't grow up.
No.
Right. None of us should. Mm-mm. I joke about we are who we are at 18. Right.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And the rest is just an act.
Military keeps you stuck in that world longer.
Yeah, it does. All right. So now kind of twisting and turning, you've done the SEAL thing. You've got some great successful foundations. You do the extreme sport from time to time, or is that a regular thing? Or, I mean, how do you have like a calendar? You say, all right, I'm going to make sure I get in X amount of, what's that routine look like for you on how you maintain everything?
Yeah. So the routine is as much as it can be with two young children and a wife who, you know, is trying to do her thing too in business. So it's quite interesting, but the goal for me was, you know, this year, 2023, because I don't set new terms for the year or whatever. I think I try to work hard every day, right?
Yeah.
And I try to adjust based off of what I'm fucking up. So for me, this year was, I'm going to work 4 days a week on specifically the current things that I'm working on. And then one day I'm going to use specifically for extreme sports and then some creativity. And so that's when I don't go to the office and I don't stay home and work. And I go to an unknown location. And I just sit there and I kind of get into my creativity.
Hmm.
What can I design next? Because it's not just about, like, for me, it's always about currency. Who am I today? What am I doing today that's relevant to the community, as opposed to, yeah, you know, once upon a time I served in the military, check me out. It's like, I didn't do shit. I'm very proud of what I did, but I've, you know the drill, man. We work with a lot of guys that are no longer here.
Yeah.
They're amazing humans. There are still a lot of guys that are here that are amazing humans and way better than me. So, and how am I doing for them? How am I honoring them? So it's about what I do today. And I'm not a SEAL anymore. You know, like I was a charity guy. I'm running a charity and I'm doing extreme sports.
Yeah.
And so why is that relevant and how can I make it relevant? So I do my creativity and my extreme sports. So I try to get out the drop zones. It's colder right now. So
yeah,
I'm a little bit of wuss. I don't necessarily like free falling in freezing cold air because it's so much colder upstairs than it is right down on the ground.
Oh yeah.
But I make it a point to do something every week. And, you know, the other day I didn't get to do anything extreme. So I just jumped in our pool and just about passed the fuck out. Bad idea.
It's cold water.
I did a 4 mile run
and
I had a 30-pound weight vest on. And then I was like, yes, now let's do some cold weather training. But instead of getting in nice and slow, I jumped in and I just about seized up underwater.
Oh,
getting out, I was like, bad idea.
And move to the stairs.
Honey.
Can you give me a towel? Make a fire.
Exactly.
Damn. Yeah, I like that whole creativity thing. I'm trying to think, do I have an equivalent of that? I don't think I have incorporated that into my routine. Creativity, or given that new place with new thoughts, right? New places generate new thoughts. I think that's a great idea.
The greatest place we can be, because we're all creative, every one of us, and we don't utilize it enough.
Yeah.
And I feel like my juices are flowing when I'm doing it. But the other thing I've done is I had this cell phone that I gave everybody the number to, because I'm the CEO of a charity.
Right.
It's got to be transparent. You got to be able to get a hold of me. That's just important. But it became where it was every day, all day, all night, all weekend. And finally, when you know, your wife steps in, it's like, hey, we need to talk. You're like, uh-oh, phone too much. So I got a phone and it was a flip phone. So I had to relearn it, which was interesting. Like, try texting on that shit today.
Yeah, the three letter options.
Oh my gosh.
A, B, C. A, B, B. No, I want B, not C. Yeah.
Exactly. I want a number. So just give me the damn number. So ultimately, I just put my close family or my close friends and my family in it. And that gave me the autonomy to leave my work phone at the office nights and weekends.
Nice.
And so if somebody's going to call me, it's going to be a conversation.
That's a great
idea.
It's
a real deal.
Yeah.
So that's helped me. And then I realized, do my friends even like me? Nobody's calling. Because they keep calling my damn other cell phone. So I'm about to transition where I shut that work phone down. And who has my number has my number. And
right.
That's it.
I was thinking about doing the same, is changing my number. Because you just saw just now, like, all these calls coming in where we're trying to do a podcast. And, you know, it just doesn't work.
No.
But I think it's good to, like, change your number, you know, every couple of years, just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
You know? And kind of, it's like a cleansing almost, you know,
it is.
Because the telemarketers, there's the regular marketing, the automated marketing. I mean, there's so many different marketing systems out there that are calling that number.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, fuck it, I'll go switch. You just got to make sure when you switch to a new one, that one belonged to somebody at some point these days. I remember when you could go get a new number and go, has that ever been used before?
Is that right?
Yeah. And they would tell you, no, this one hasn't been used. Be like, okay, I'll take it. But that doesn't exist anymore. I mean, every single combination of phone number has already been used. So you're going to end up with somebody else's marketing folks, you know, whether you like it or not, you know, but it's just, you kind of hope that, well, maybe it was like a teenage kid that owned this phone before me.
Totally. Well, you know what's cool about it? So I went to AT&T because that's where I was like, all right, got to go do it. And I was like, hey, what kind of number can I get? Can you give me something cool?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, yeah. I mean, what do you want? Like Rodeo Drive, Beverly Hills? And I'm like, no, I want something cool.
like middle of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. Give me Alaska.
Yeah.
And so I got an Alaska number.
Yeah, there you go.
Why not? And so it's like nobody knows it. And I started to fuck with my dad. Because I started calling him. And he doesn't have my number. And I just start blowing him up back to back. He, you know, declines me. I call him again. And I just do it like 15, 20 times in a row. Finally, he picks up. Who the hell is this? I was like, it's your son.
Yeah.
What? What are you doing in Alaska?
I'm not in Alaska.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the internet plus, you know, now with mobile phones, borders are very, very gray. Yeah. Actually, they don't exist anymore.
Right.
You know, you can be looking at something on the internet that's halfway around the world, and you can go get a phone number that's halfway around the world as well.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. More with the founder of Sons of the Flag, Ryan Parrott, after the break. Are you ready to see if you can survive this podcast?
Yes.
All right. Let's let the cool music start to play. And I'm going to get myself sorted and drop you right into this hypothetical survival scenario. Here we go. All right. Got the screen to the right. This one will prompt us on questions. And I try to go back and forth between your scenario and here. We'll see how good I do. I'm still new at this with this whole in-person thing. All right.
Check.
So here we go. You are in New York City. You are attending a convention with potential donors for your foundations. Right. It's a Sunday. It's about 4 p.m. and the event, which is going to last all weekend, is over. You take an Uber and head back uptown to a hotel. Okay. The car is a Prius.
Awesome.
All of a sudden, coming from the west, you see an incredibly bright light. I hope this doesn't give you flashbacks to your getting blown up thing. A nuke has just gone off in nearby New Jersey. All right. So bad guys aren't fucking around anymore. They've bumped it up a notch or two. The blast was approximately 3 miles away from your location. So first question, all right? It's coming from the west.
Check.
You can see that incredibly bright light. Nuke's gone off in New Jersey, 3 miles away. Do you A, direct the driver to pull over, then exit the vehicle, or B, direct the driver to pull over, trade seats with him since you're a better driver?
I mean, that's B.
B?
Oh, yeah.
Let's see what this thing says. And A.
What?
A, mainly because you're not going to get very far in New York traffic.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to be in a Prius when you die. I mean, come on. Let's get in something cool.
That would be my luck.
So you have the driver pull over and he lets you out. People, of course, are freaking out everywhere, right? So gridlock is certain, even with pedestrians, you know, there could be potential gridlock. The nearest building is about 150 yards away. Okay. So do you A, get behind large concrete barrier, or B, sprint to the nearest building?
It's a tough one.
I know. Can go either way here, but there is a right answer.
Man. B.
Sprint to the nearest building. Well, let's see what it says. A. Behind the large concrete barrier. The reason being is that this blast wave travels at the speed of sound.
Check. I'm going to die.
I know you're an extreme guy, and you probably are pretty fast. I mean, you just said you ran 4 miles and jumped in a cold pool, so you might actually be able to pull it off.
I don't like watching my death right now, though. This is not fun.
Yeah, so that's two, okay? Now, you got to get a 70 to pass, all right? It's like back in school.
All
70 right. Is still passing these days, right?
I have no idea. I hope so.
I think it is, right?
Yeah.
I used to hear people say, I got a D, and I'm like, why is there Ds?
Yeah, I don't know.
D is still not passing. Yeah, like, I don't even know why the D exists. A, B, C, or F, right?
That's right.
Okay. So, yeah, the blast travels a little faster than you can run. even though you're really fast.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that.
And then New York does have heavy concrete benches all over the place, right?
I'd imagine
and,
so.
And raised medians and other, you know, concrete barriers or construction zones where there's the big concrete shoring and the things they use to prevent people from falling in. So because you won't outrun the blast, you want to take cover behind thick concrete benches, concrete walls, heavy concrete planters even, right?
Check.
So, knowing that, while behind the large concrete barrier, do you A, lay on your stomach, or B, curl up into the fetal position? Now, I know you know this one.
Lay on your stomach.
Lay on your stomach. What does the game say? Yes, lay on your stomach. And why is that, Birdman?
That's a great question, because I guessed it.
Really? Do you remember going through any, like, the grenade thing? Grenade, any of the grenade, or any explosive training?
You'd overpressure?
Feet towards the blast, on your stomach, legs crossed, so it protects all your femoral arteries in case shrapnel wants to go between your legs. Then you're opening your mouth.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. And hands over your head, covering your ears. Right. So you're kind of relieving all that pressure and letting it pass through you. And laying as flat as possible kind of helps with those shock waves and stuff that you're about to feel. Good job. You got that one right.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting deal.
Oh, no.
Or a nuke.
Can you imagine? Yeah. I mean,
that would suck.
Yeah, it'd just suck. And with Russia feeling all feisty and China feeling all froggy, I mean, it's. You know, who knows what our future has, right? Okay, so which makes these scenarios pertinent, even though they're I'd love to say they're unrealistic.
Hey, no, I know what I'm doing on two of them.
But you just never know, right? You never know. All right, so you lay flat behind the concrete barrier, and you survive that initial blast wave. So good job. Next question. So do you, A, remain on the ground behind the barrier, or B, move to your next position?
Move to the next position.
I'm going to agree with you. Let me see here, though. Yes, move to your next position. Structures will likely be damaged from the blast wave. A good rule of thumb is to get away from the compromised structures and measure of 3 times the height of the structure itself, right? So a lot of things are going to be damaged. And if something's going to fall on you, you want to be 3 times its height away. That way you're clear of debris and anything else that comes from it. So you move from your concrete barrier, which would be damaged at this point, and as well as the other structures around you are also damaged. And you want to get away from them because they could come down on you at this point. The Uber driver is nowhere to be found, by the way. But his Prius is still nearby.
Sweet.
So next, take a look here. Do you, A, acquire commandeer the Prius, or B, go ahead and grab an older model vehicle?
Ah.
Yeah, you know this one.
Yeah, I would acquire the older model vehicle.
And what's your initial thought? Why on that?
Well, Priuses are electric, so God only knows what you got, and we don't know where it's at power-wise. And two, older vehicles that don't require electricity can drive.
So. That is right, and the reason being is most people don't know when a nuke goes off, not only are you dealing with a nuclear blast, but you're also dealing with an EMP, right? It is such a huge blast that it has its own inherent electromagnetic pulse, which fries electronics. So anybody who has one of them old Ford pickups or, you know, any of your early model vehicles, the idea is that they won't be as affected. Now, they still could be. I mean, none of us will ever know until the time comes.
Easier to hotwire an old vehicle.
That's right.
Yep.
You know, the circuitry of the Prius definitely will be fried. We do know that much.
Plus, you just said, you know, why would you want to die in a Prius?
That's right. Yes, get the old truck. So, also, older model cars have more mass, right? They're made of steel. They're old school. So, they provide a little extra shielding if there's some secondary stuff going on. And because you're 3 miles from the detonation, this means you have about 20 minutes before fallout starts, okay? You're looking due west, all right, at New Jersey, and you can see the fallout moving due east straight towards your position. Makes sense? Mm-hmm. You steal an older model car that happens to have the keys in it. You got lucky.
Sweet.
So, next, do you... Oop, we got that right. So, do you floor it and head east away from the fallout, or B, floor it and head north parallel to the fallout?
That's a great question. So... floor it, head north.
Right, parallel.
Yep.
Okay, let's see if you got it right. I think you're right. Yes, B, okay, because New York gets most of its weather from New Jersey. I think there's a joke there. So, for this particular hypothetical scenario, a strong easterly winds are driving a swath of fallout towards you. For fallout, you want to always go parallel, right? You're not going to outrun Mother Nature. Right. I always tell people, you're not going to outrun Mother Nature, whether it's wind, whether it's a virus. You're just not going to outrun it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to take its course. So just buckle down, take your hits, and move on. But in this case, a hit means death or cancer, like cancer that grows at rapid speed and you die. So it's better to go parallel. You only have about 10 minutes left before the fallout hits. So do you, let's see what we got here, A, run to the river and dive in, or B, seek shelter immediately?
Seek shelter immediately.
Let's see what we got. Yes, seek shelter immediately, B. There's somebody.
Yeah,
here we go. The fallout cloud could expand, and the wind can always change. And so with 10 minutes left, you now need to seek shelter immediately. With fallout, not only is there debris coming your way and a huge threat of gamma rays, these will exist for many, many hours after the blast. So shelter is the only thing that really makes sense. You're not going to go hang out in the water for hours on end. So you leave the car, you look for shelter. Do you, A, choose a wooden frame warehouse 2 blocks to the north, or B, a 10-story brick building 2 blocks to the south?
The south or north? I'd say north. Wooden frame warehouse 2 blocks to the north.
Yeah, you think so? Which one's going to provide the best protection?
Well, definitely brick.
Mm-hmm.
But it's saying you're going south 2 blocks and you're just going north.
What do you think? Finally.
Best protection, you just said. So brick, obviously. I'll take a fail on that one, but it's brick.
All right, let's see. Let's see. And yes, you are correct. B. 10-story brick building. Okay. Shit. Really, when we're talking about gamma rays or any of that kind of fallout stuff, it penetrates anything, right?
Check.
So,
this is not my world, by the way. It's one thing I didn't train in was nuclear warfare.
Yeah, that's an interesting kind of training.
Yeah.
Did you ever do any of that nuke training?
I only did like...
the one where they...
put all your gear on. That's
okay.
That's it. And I was like, that's just bio, whatever.
Yeah.
No nuke.
Yeah, where I learned a lot of this was there were these exercises that they would do. And... without getting into classified and stuff, you got educated on nuke and then you would go out and exercise everything that related to that kind of stuff. And it was pretty cool.
Huh.
And anyway, you learned real quickly, you know, what's really going to work and what isn't when you're dealing with these gamma rays. But gamma rays have a penetrating capability, you know, and they can be slowed down and stopped when you talk about materials that are super dense, right? So concrete with rebar in it and all that certainly will slow it down and make it less toxic to you, or hopefully protect you completely. Your primary concern with fallout, and if you're going to have to go and find shelter and shelter in place for a long period of time, you know, anything concrete, steel, you know, that's where you're going to increase your odds of surviving it, really. So yeah, the large brick building is your best choice. 10-story brick building is likely to be reinforced steel as well, so that definitely lends to your protection.
Concrete, so I'm going to a skate park.
Check. That's right. Yeah, right. There you go. Skate park might work real well. So you get into your brick building, OK? Okay, once you're inside, all right, are you A, stripping off all your clothes, or B, looking for food and supplies?
Look for food and supplies.
Are you sure about that?
I would say so.
All right, let's see what it says. Hey, strip off all your clothes. Reason being is you've been outside, right? And you, the dust and the waves, you're contaminated.
Check.
And you're going to drag that contamination into what would be potentially a sanitized environment from gamma rays and those particles. So we got, you know, we got crotch rockets going by, and then we got airplanes going by here.
Love it.
It's great, great sight. It's a great sight for audio.
I haven't been out of the teams too long. My first choice would always be strip off your clothes.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, yeah, you want, now that you've been dusted by a nuclear, you know, wave, yeah, you got to get out of those clothes. So, yeah, like you said, team guys, we like to strip it down. So you strip down. You find a bottle of water and you rinse off, right? You get it all off your skin. You find some janitor clothing to change into that happened to be in the building. So, last question. Been outside, been dusted, you know, you get your janitor clothes on. Do you A, shelter in place in the basement, or shelter in place on a higher floor? Yes. You're right at 70. You cannot miss this one.
Oh, shit.
Are you going low where it might be denser, or are you going high?
Yeah. Well, thank you for that, by the way. Is it that foot stomp on the ground?
Yeah.
Going low.
All right.
Going low.
Yes. Let's check just to be safe. Yay. A, shelter in place in the basement. Yes. If you move to high ground, which is kind of like your first thought, right?
Yeah,
going
yeah.
to high ground, you think I'm getting above all this. But when it comes to fallout, windows don't stop shit when it comes to gamma rays. You know, you basically thinner materials the higher you go. You go into a basement or into the parking garage area, if it's, you know, anything below ground, now you're protected by earth, concrete, steel, and you're probably going to limit the amount of gamma rays that actually get to you. Now, whoever wants to be alive for Fallout, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
It's just going to be you and the cockroaches, they say. So, you know, it's maybe for you, you go high and you just base jump without your chute.
Yes. Right? Yes. That sounds great.
I think going out with a bang. Congratulations, though. Ryan, you have survived this podcast with by the hair of your chinny chin chin, they say. 70%. Good job. Where can people find you? What else do you have going on that people can research, check out, and keep an eye on you?
Certainly. I mean, the number one thing, go to the social media at Birdman Actual. That's on Instagram, Ryan Birdman Parrot on Facebook. Those are the primary focuses right now because I hate social media. And so up until recently, I didn't do it. Now I'm getting into it to actually push the word out. We will start to push out more word on this human performance project that will have its own page at some point. But the easiest way right now is at Birdman Actual. That's where you're going to get daily information and can keep on the journey. And I will share out all the charity stuff and just all the extreme sports stuff we do through that.
Awesome. Well, it was awesome having you here today. I do appreciate you coming in. That is Ryan Birdman Parrot at Birdman Actual on all social media. If I'm not, I think I'm following you, but if I'm not, I'm going to go follow him. So if you get lost trying to figure out where he's at, just go to who I'm following. And you can follow him from there and watch all the good things he's got going on at Sons of the Flag and the Bird's Eye View Project. And then what's coming soon, 7X. So we'll just keep an eye on you, buddy. You got good shit going on. And like I always say, keep it simple because crisis will complicate the rest. And that's it for now. Can You Survive This Podcast is a production of Calvary Audio and iHeartMedia. Recorded live from a secure location here in Dallas, Texas. Produced by Brandon Morgan, Jeff Apple, and Clint Emerson. Executive produced by Keegan Rosenberger and Dana Brunetti. For Calvary Audio, I'm Clint Emerson.